Hey y'all, it's me again, Bonnie Violet. I just wanted to take a second and thank my Patreon members. Patreon members are folks who contribute on a monthly basis anywhere from $3 to $150 a month to support the work of a queer chaplain. Big shout out to Victoria Thompson, Jason Brandt, Brandon Stanton, Kim Silva, Brandy McCarg, Randy Sandknot, Bob Kaiser, Joey Huckmeister, Violet Rhiannon, Gabriel, Jonathan, Patrick, and Todd Atkins-Whitley. Thank you so much for your continued contributions. And if you're interested in joining the Patreon, just check the link in the description. Go to patreon.com/BonnieViolet. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. So my life in glitter, so to speak, I've been kind of trying to recall back to kind of like my, you know, I wrote this thing a while back that said, when I stopped chasing the glitter and spent some time in the dark. And I've really been kind of reflecting on that a little bit and realizing that, you know, for much of my life, I spent chasing the glitter and chasing the light, and really kind of running and suppressing and avoiding, I think, the darkness, you know. And I think that, you know, light and dark is, you know, I think that's just a part of all of us, and that's just a part of living. And I think I've been reflecting just a little bit on, like, kind of like, when did that start for me? And also, I think, you know, I've been really struggling with being, I've really felt like I've been in this dark space for a couple of years now, and really fighting demons, if you will. And I say demons, just to play with that language a little bit. I know that it can be a little bit difficult for some, and even for me. But also in kind of speaking to it as a demon, I think it makes my understanding of demons maybe a little bit more real, I guess, instead of some like supernatural, like dark entities or whatever. It's this like thing within me that is, you know, has the potential to harm me and take me away from the light, or take me away from my goodness or the goodness or others, or just of life, really kind of take my life away. And in the sense of, like, you know, getting your life, you know, like there's a difference between being alive and living. And I think oftentimes if I'm not careful, I can let the dark rob me of living. And I think there's a part of me that kind of have always known that. And I think that's why I've always kind of chased or leaned toward the sparkle of life and the sparkle of things. And kind of, I know this might not be super linear, but just kind of in thinking back of, like, so like in the beginning, where was this, or how did this play out in my life? And the first thing that kind of comes to mind is my grandma Violet. My grandma Violet was a very creative, kind of, you know, gaudy, tacky kind of individual, if you will, aesthetically, and just very creative in crafts. And, like, you know, she crocheted, and, you know, her and I, we used to make like earrings out of like puzzle pieces and bobby pins and beads. And, you know, I think I really began to play a little with that idea of creativity and expression. And I think to me, you know, glitter might not have been actual glitter or rhinestones, but it was something that reflected life, or that was an extension of life, or a way for me to stand out, or begin to even let out parts of myself, My grandma Bonnie is also somebody who comes to mind as well. She died when I was one, so I don't have any memories at all of her, but I have heard everyone in my family talk about how much I just loved her and she loved me, and I just loved being with her. And there's an element, there's something deep inside me that feels that and knows that to be true. To receive so much life and joy from my grandma Bonnie. I remember hearing that she would, you know, when I was crying and my mom couldn't get me to sleep or get me to settle down or whatever, my grandma Bonnie would like take me and drive me around in her car until I fell asleep. I still fall asleep in cars really easy if I'm riding for any period of time. But I think that, you know, there's a softness in that. There's a softness, I think, is also maybe another way of speaking to the glitter, if you will, or the sparkle. And I think even to sometimes it might even be like the femininity within me, or, you know, I think there's a lot of ways that reflect these parts of myself. And I think throughout my life, I've only been allowed or found ways to not so overtly reveal myself or let out parts of myself, if that makes any sense at all. And I'm kind of reflecting a little bit too on, you know, I can look at photos of myself as a kid, like say, and most of the photos I have are like, you know, the ones that I was taking at school or whatever, but there's a photo or there's a pose that I often do in some photos that you can see throughout my age, regardless, where I am kind of like I have my hands up on my face. In some ways, I feel like it's a softness. There's like a soft vulnerability within that, even in my masculine moments or more masculine moments of my life. There's photos of me like in my beard and just kind of in that same similar pose in my early 20s, and then as in elementary school as well. And one thing about that is that that was a pose that was often just a natural state for me, and it was a natural or a comfortable posture, if you will, for myself that wasn't safe always. And I say that in the sense of my father would often, I recall getting yelled at off like so much about like me putting my hands on my face or other parts of like that is like, you know, not speaking up loud enough, or I often cried at moments of potential conflict. And so I often now when I see myself in photos like that, it speaks to me as a soft strength. It's my softness, it's my femininity. In a lot of ways, it's my Bonnie Violet kind of shining through, if you will. Much of my childhood, I was constantly, I don't know, this part of me was constantly, I don't know, policed or pointed out as being not correct or not right or not in alignment with who I am or who I was supposed to be. And yet it was kind of a natural state for me. And, but I quickly learned to be different and to try to present myself differently, and to suppress that part of me. But it still kind of came out. I remember that you could see photos of me in sweaters. I used to make puff paint sweaters with my grandma and I think my mother, and would wear them. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways they weren't sweaters maybe you saw all the other boys wearing. And But I think that was a way of me feeling, and I love those sorts of things. I remember there was this one outfit that I wore that my mom just hated it. It was like this bright blue, kind of like turquoisey blue, kind of a neon blue and white striped button-up shirt. And I would wear that over top of like a bright blue kind of like tie-dye, but it was kind of like those, you know, it was like, you know, 80s, 90s where like, well, I guess it would have been in the 80s, probably maybe early 90s where it was like, it kind of looked tie-dye-ish, but more like lightning or whatever. Anyway, I used to wear that underneath this like striped shirt and I just freaking loved it. It was like my favorite thing to wear. And I remember I wasn't supposed to wear it for my school photos. I'm not sure why, but my parents did not want me to wear it. They hated it. And so like I wore that blue lightning shirt to school that day and I stuck my striped button-up shirt in my bag or whatever. But anyway, I ended up taking photos with that look on. And I remember also getting, if I recall correctly, getting kind of in trouble for for wearing it. But, you know, I think there's a part of me, that part of me has always, you know, tried to, I think as I've gotten older, maybe I've just gotten better at like embracing that part of myself and letting more of that out. And, you know, I was trying to think a little bit and kind of bringing it back to glitter or the sparkly things, you know, and I think, you know, when I was younger, I was drawn to these things because I think there were elements in which I think, one, they reflected my own light back to me. You know, I created walls and developed these walls that made it difficult for me to see, or like I thought I had to hide my light, so to speak. But it was this sort of battle because it also was just so deep in me and so strong that I couldn't help but it leak out. And I couldn't help but also want to express it throughout my life. So I think that like it was something that I was drawn to because I think it was a way of kind of pulling out that light and reflecting the light back to me that I struggled to see around me often. It's been kind of interesting just to reflect on this a little bit. I remember, too, kind of like, yeah, because, you know, like glitter or, you know, rhinestones is something that I think a lot of people would not be surprised about me talking about nowadays. But, you know, definitely as a child, as a someone who was being raised as a boy, that was not something that I got to ordain, you know, put on my body or even on my clothes, I think, that much that I can recall. And I remember that, like, when did that kind of come into my life, when I was able to start to like ordain my body or put glitter or rhinestones on? And, you know, the thing that really pushed it for me was my HIV diagnosis. My HIV diagnosis, I was infected when I was 19 and found out when I was 20. And at that time, I wasn't an out queer person. I didn't even really know what that was. I had sex with a, you know, a couple of men, but I'd never really embraced that part of me. I thought it was some sort of like demon, if you will, that was taking over my body, and this part of me that I wasn't supposed to like own and accept. And then I got HIV from that demon, if you will, or even those moments with that demon. And it was a very difficult time for me. You know, I had just, it's a lot to cover, but it was such a traumatic experience for me and my family. And it was so contrary to what I had planned for my life and the life that I had hoped to be able to provide for my family. And, you know, all of a sudden I went from being this young person who was smart and heart of Jesus and just seemed to have the whole world in front of me and was just destined for success and achievement and, you know, hopefully an ability somehow to, you know, have a different experience than what I grew up in, and to be able to potentially help my family have a different experience as well. And my, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, I think the things that as a young kid, I was super optimistic and felt the pressure. And I also thought I had the gift to be able to do that sort of thing. And so getting HIV, I felt like really robbed that from me and from my loved ones. And I felt that I, because of my failing, because of my, I would say stupidity at the time, but it really was ignorance. I lost all of that for myself and for my family. And it was really difficult for me. And that's when I started, like, and after my HIV diagnosis, that's when I really had to kind of find something. I don't know, you know, I was super involved with church at that time. And church was a place that allowed me to feel safe and held in. There was a soft space for me to land. My sexuality, my all those sorts of things just didn't seem to matter in the ways that it conflicted with so many other places in my life in which I either learned to just not express it or just not be in those spaces with it. And so once I had my HIV diagnosis, it was just like, boom, it was like, it was just automatically, I was like, you know, a faggot with AIDS. And so it really kind of caused me to, it felt like there was a no turning back. Like I just, this is who I am and it's going to kill me. And I also had come to understand that I also couldn't be any differently than how I had been and be okay, I guess. And there was a part of me that knew that God could love me anyway, but I couldn't fathom that being possible. So I just left church and I left that whole sort of like intentional awareness and connection and seeking of God. It was just like this idea of like, I'm just going to put it over here on the shelf. And I know it's there and I know that it's got me, so to speak, but I didn't have the capacity to deal with everything that was going on with life. And I had a lot of shame at that time. I honestly thought I just had so much shame with being a queer person, with being a person living with HIV, with being a person who had, you know, failed myself and my family. And so, you know, I kind of, you know, got the HIV diagnosis and then I had to kind of come out. And I also, I needed a softening. I needed something to soften the blow of life and a soft place to land. And church was not that place and home was not that place. And I found clubs, I found queer nightclubs and queer people and ecstasy and mostly ecstasy. And that helped me kind of soften the blow of life. And that also put me in this like lifestyle and these environments and places in which I could begin to kind of like wear glitter and rhinestones. And, you know, life happened. And I remember even feeling that like glitter was an attractive thing. It was like, it wasn't something that made men want me or that made me like sexy or pretty. In some ways, it actually was more of a deterrent. It was almost like too much of me and too much of that part that the people around me didn't, you know, wanna get with, so to speak. And I have had a very tumultuous or difficult and traumatic experience with sex and sexuality. I would say sexuality, yes, but also in physical sex, as in I've had a lot of men, I've had sex with a lot of men I didn't want to have sex with. I've been actually raped and sexually assaulted. I've been drugged and raped. I've had like intimate partners rape me, and I've had a very challenged experience with consent around sex, and as in the act of sex. And there was a time in my younger years that I actually wore glitter as a deterrent. It was a way for me to kind of hopefully repel the men and the people that I weren't able to say no to. It's kind of maybe a weird reflection and probably something to consider a little bit more, but oftentimes glitter was a protection. It was a, I think it was almost a wall or a barrier, even, if you will. It was something that I could put out in front of me in order to protect me in a lot of ways. And I think to some degree that is still the case for me. Not in the sense of like deterring the sexual advances or the that sort of thing, but more in the sense of, I think, protecting my body, protecting my spirit. And, you know, I think as I've been a little bit more dysphoric with my transition and stuff, I think it's, you know, it's in some ways it's like a mask. It's something that I can hide behind, that I can put on, if you will. But it also, I think, still is like an expression of light. It's an expression of my light. It's a way in which I can transmit light into the world when I am struggling to let it out within. Maybe it's a channel. Maybe it's something that I can actually then put my light into and then put out into the world. I know that I love seeing how people respond to it, and I do feel safer in it a lot of the times. I just feel more comfortable and at ease, and it's easier to connect with others because I think somewhat they're able to, it draws them to me. And then once they're there, then I can kind of open up a little bit more. I think I'm just so afraid of so many people and what they may or may not do or think or say or be toward me because of who and how I am. And I think there's also a boldness and a strength that is perceived of me that sometimes doesn't feel true for me, but does seem like a strength to others. So I think it does, in ways, help, you know, strengthen people who see that in me. I think it may create a perception in which others can receive strength and hope, and in that, it does come back to me as well. It's really interesting to see, and, you know, obviously, you know, throughout life, you know, the relationship and understanding can change. And I think it's just been interesting to kind of speak of my narrative of my life story through the sparkly things, if you will. One thing, though, that I think I have done much of my adult life, young adult life, and into, I would say, even into like my mid-30s, was really, and even I think, well, the last couple of years, is really kind of chasing that light and seeking the light and only like trying to be in the light. I think always feeling a little overwhelmed by and kind of taken over by the, I don't know, like, I feel like there's always been, I think there is always this darkness and this light. And I think that there's a balance of it that is advantageous to experience. And, you know, I think, you know, like, balance, oftentimes, in order to balance things, you have to kind of just widen the lens a little bit more to see the balance in, say, in anything, really. So you might have moments of darkness that's like months and months or days and days, or maybe just a moment, and light the same. And I feel like the last few years I've really been spending time in the dark, and I think it's partially because I ran from it for so long. I just ran from those negative voices, those difficult truths of myself and the world from which I live in, and just tried to avoid and keep going and keep going and keep going. And eventually I think I got to a place in which I could finally spend some time in the dark, to actually sit in the dark and be with it and learn from it and work to bring, to just, you know it, I guess, and come to understand it. And I think get to a space in which I can use it as a tool, and to see it as a tool of, to help, I guess, you know. But I have been wondering though, if, you know, partially it can be a dangerous thing to sit in the dark for too long, or, you know, I think I've had moments where I felt like it's just going to take over. And the darkness to me, you know, comes in the state of like depression and isolation and negative self-talk and perception of myself and how other people see me, and just not being able to understand what my passion and purpose in life is. And to me, you know, the passion and purpose is what gives me life and animates me through life and causes me to do the things that I do, and gives me tasks to do and places to go and people to see. And when I don't have that, I don't know how to live. And so I think I've ran from that a good part of my life in the last couple of years. And I ran from that in not transitioning, in drug use and alcohol use, in moving from place to place, in different relationships and no relationships at all. That those are the ways in which I've kind of avoided the darkness or the difficult aspects of myself or the world that I feel like can overtake me. And I feel like in a lot of ways it has overtaken me over the last, you know, couple of years. You know, the last couple of years I've had moments where I never wanted to like take my life, but I really didn't understand why I was alive and like what to do with it. And it was so painful and so hard and so lonely and so, and I have been at times unable to do anything about it and to be resistant as fuck as anything that is trying to help me. And I think that in some ways, you know, it has begun to overtake me, and I've been in it for a long time, and I've had this desire to put more light out into the world than darkness. And the beautiful thing about I guess life and me and my experience is that even though I've been still in this dark space, for me there have still been moments of, you know, being able to still be a light in the world. But I've been really struggling with figuring out like, what do I have to transmit anymore? And I don't have anything but darkness and depression and scarcity and fear and shame and whatever. Like, that's all I feel like I've been transmitting, and that's all I felt like I've been capable of transmitting or have transmitted a lot of. And I think this has left me alone and by myself, and I think in a lot of ways so that I can wrestle with them, so that I can begin to, I guess, you know, not pretend that it's not a part of me, it's not a part of the world, it's not part of life, and figuring out actually, you know, what it's trying to teach me or tell me, or what I can glean from it, you know. And so I've been really struggling with how, like, I don't want to transmit that that darkness. I want to transmit the light. And so I think I have, you know, I have been able to do that through like rhinestones and drag and my aesthetic at times. But the last few months, I haven't even been like, I can't even stand to be seen. Sometimes I'm so dysphoric that like I just can't, and that's partially why this is an audio and not video, because I just can't seem to get in front of the camera or get in front of people. You know, this is like day 7 in a row not leaving my house, you know. And a big part of that is not because I don't want to, but it's because I'm afraid to, and or I'm letting whatever, you know. And again, I've really been trying to find purpose and in what I have gone through, and to not be in a state of victimhood, because I think in a lot of ways I still have identified a lot with being a victim, even though I haven't adequately ever, I think, embraced it or held it, though in looking back, I can see that that element has always been there, that element of myself of always feeling like a victim or like less than or you know, not as good or unable to achieve or have or possess what others may deserve, that I'm undeserving in some way. And so that's the darkness, if you will, that I feel like I've tried to chase and make up for and, you know, try to overcome with, like, I guess, good deeds and, you know, again, just spending time in the light and chasing the light. And, you know, I think eventually it's caught up with me, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing that I can, and I know that now I have the capacity. I have the ability, I have the strength, and I have the spirit and the resilience to be able to finally be with it. But because I think I waited for so long and ran for so long, that there's just so much of it that it's really easy for it to, you know, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And now it's like, feels like a David and Goliath situation instead of like a pendulum or a balance. And so I'm working to find my power, and I want to authentically move forward and not find myself in this state again. I want to be able to walk forward with the dark and the light, I guess, or with, you know, I guess just a reality, a humility, an understanding and an ability to hold and be with all those aspects of myself in a way that is useful and helpful and not harmful and hurtful, so that I can be able to be more intentional about what it is that I transmit and can actually be transmitting what it is that I want to transmit. So in other words, healing, I think. A lot of healing and acceptance and coming to believe and understand something different. And I've been speaking this negative, difficult pain over and 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 over, to the point that I'm just exhausted and I'm tired of hearing myself say it, and I'm tired of thinking that it is all the truth and that is all there will be and what the point, and really trying to find ways to speak life into my life instead of, you know, the lack of it. So I think I want to leave it at that, because I think it's been pretty long. I'd love to hear from you on your thoughts or reflections, and hearing me talk about this and how it relates to you or doesn't relate to you. And I'm sure there's so much more I could pull apart and think about and talk about. And maybe I will pick up this thought pattern again in the future. But for now, I think I'm going to leave it at that. And may I continue to spend some time in the dark. No, I don't know. Like, you know, I said, you know, I stop chasing the glitter and spend some time in the dark. And I think there's an element of just being with both. And I think there's moments when we need to be in the glitter and the shine and the light. And maybe times when both are at play and times when, you know, it's one or the other. But wherever it's at, I think I just want to be able to have an awareness and maybe a little bit more power and control or awareness and understanding of when and how it's at play and how it impacts me and the people around me. So I'll leave it at that. We're right at that 33-minute mark, which is 333 is kind of a magic number for me. So I'll take that as a sign to say goodbye. I hope that you're doing well, and I hope that this brought a little light to your darkness, or maybe a little understanding, or even just connection, and that you're not alone, and an opportunity for me to remember and speak into the fact that I'm not alone. All right. I love you. Bye-bye. Hey y'all, Bonnie Violet here again. Just wanted to take a second to let you know about Splintered Grace Podcast. Splintered Grace Podcast just completed its fifth season entitled Still Seeking. Splintered Grace is a podcast that I co-host with my aunt, who is a conservative Christian and one of my biggest supporters in my trans identity and just life in general. While many family members are choosing to no longer speak, we have chosen to sit at the table and engage in difficult conversations to find peace and restoration. Over our 24-year relationship, we have had a lot of ups and downs, and we haven't always really liked each other. We definitely never understood each other, and still some of it we don't, but we love one another so much and so hard and really work hard to show up for one another. And our hope is that by listening to this podcast, others may be able to begin to have peace and restoration in some of their other relationships with family members and or other loved ones. Check it out, Splintered Grace Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts or on YouTube. Take care. Love ya. Bye.